He can be visualized as shining with a green and golden flame with a rose-colored light over his head. The Archangel of Hod is Michael. Hod is the sphere of the magic, and Michael is its archangel because he holds in control the various evil influences which might escape into the world of men. He is thus a very essential protector in magical formulae, especially where the would-be practitioners are inexperienced. The ancient Jews listed whole choirs of angels by name in addition to the great beings here enumerated, and to deal with them would require much time, but you have some indications about 10 so great that they are each in his own sphere in charge of the mighty emanations of God. Many who work the tree are inclined to get in touch with the God forces of the Sephiroth, using the God forms of varying pantheons, whereas, in fact, there are certain archetypal powers of these spheres that are better brought through by use of the archangelic powers and forms. 19. The teaching on the ray exemplars, especially contained in chapter 20, is of great importance and should be carefully meditated upon. The teaching has been given in a very condensed form, largely owing to the abstruse and difficult nature of the subject, which made it very difficult to put the ideas into adequate expression in language. A good way to obtain an understanding is to think of the great teachers and redeemers of mankind who have guided the various phases of evolution in all conditions, both cosmic and mundane. Think of the mighty influences and conditions that pour through the great currents of force marked by their zodiacs, the greater zodiac of the rays, and the better known lesser zodiac. In these great currents work various types of the redemptive force of the Logos, or, to use a more cosmic phrase, the great cosmic force fuses in a special way on a special occasion with what might be called the central aspect of the Logos in order the better to influence evolution. As the different types of this great force touch our own evolution, they give off to each one a definite influence. They act as nourishers, helpers, feeders of that particular divine spark. So it has always been in every phase of our evolution. The being of whom we know most is he who is sometimes called the Lord of the Purple Ray. He is, so to speak, the group mind of that ray, a great group mind which is at the super phase in which it leads on our evolution to its conclusion. The tremendous force of which I speak, the anointed force of the Purple Ray, has focused to some extent from time to time in some great guide or leader who has come down into the world of men, but the Lord of the Purple Ray is, of course, unique. The intricacy of the subject makes it nearly impossible to give a clear exposition in words alone. Words should be combined with deep contemplation and concentration rather than with only intellectual meditation to gain some beginning of understanding which will continue to grow. The names and attributes traditionally given to the ray exemplars are of high importance, not only because they give some idea of the being through whom the force focused in this world, but because they can put you in touch with a cosmic power which exceeds the force of the ray shown when their bearers were in the world. There is, naturally, a difference between the cosmic Christ and the force of the cosmic Christ focused in an individual, but the latter proceeds from the former and could not manifest without it. The forces of the ray exemplars are very strong and very deep. It can be of great value to link them mentally with those more abstract aspects of the individual called variously in esoteric as a higher self or the individuality. It is possible in suitably prepared conditions for this great force to be contacted in ritual, but great care is needed as it can have a destructive effect in burning up the dross if it is brought too near the earth plane. Normally in ritualistic conditions it acts to use the symbolism of the Kabbalistic tree of life from the supernal triangle through Tiferet and does not come below that Sephira, but on occasion it may work through to the astral and etheric levels using a group of people as a basis of manifestation and bringing about repercussions whereby all in that group would be affected, since none could be in contact with such a force and remain unaffected. The great ray impinges on the higher self in such a manner as to impel it towards integration with the personality, and everyone save those whose integration was well advanced would feel strong effects which might well be beyond their capacity at that stage to support. When this ray is brought through, the personality has to absorb in a way the experience of the higher self, even as the higher self has to absorb the experiences of the personality after physical death. This power of the cosmic Christ can be thought of as that of the higher planes of the sun behind the sun, which so to speak unites the ray with the logos. The time has now come when the great force as a whole will no longer focus in a single being but in a group ever widening until it takes in the whole world. The inner plane body now used by the force can be thought of as something like the highest esoteric conception of Horus. Nevertheless, the beings in whom the force once manifested individually still work in remote planes and maintain in the cosmos the distinctive power with which they once worked on Earth. It is sometimes liable to cause confusion if a ray is associated with a special color. The ray of the cosmic Christ is that of the oversoul of the Lords of Mind. It works through the processional signs of the zodiac and contains within itself a whole spectrum or a set of strata of colors, of which strata the so-called purple ray is a stratum. The green ray or green stratum of the same great ray worked through the force described in the legends of Osiris, Orpheus and Dionysos. It is the true ray of mind and leads to the innermost sanctuaries of the mysteries. 20. Man's primal loyalty is to the one unity. Loyalty is hardly the correct word to use, as the one is a law. No other type of existence is possible. In it we live and move and have our being. It is, however, very necessary to understand that the one, the Logos, is actually the becoming manifest of the unmanifest. It is unity not because it is concentrated or limited, but because it is undifferentiated. The nucleus of the being of each immortal soul is a nucleus of energy in the unmanifest. The Logos provides the ordered substance of manifestation on all planes, whence we build up the vehicles of manifestation on each plane. Therefore is our manifested existence conditioned thereby, the logoidal nature being the law of existence to which we must submit if we would live harmoniously in manifestation. The nucleus of each living soul does not derive its existence from the logoidal being but from the unmanifest itself. However, as man manifests forth in the sphere of the solar logos, man must work in and through its conditions, which are the laws of the logoidal nature. The solar logos is the god of the solar system and gives it its laws. This logos, working through the planetary beings and their archangelic guides, is the source of the differentiated energy manifesting within the bounds of the solar nebula. In brief, the solar logos is the conditioner and sustainer of manifestation in its universe. The great unmanifest is unconditioned. 2. There are three titles which might be confusing unless a clear idea of the way in which they are used has been gained. They are, 1. The planetary entity, 2. The planetary intelligence or the archangelic intelligence, 3. The planetary being. The planetary entity is the logoidal idea of the planet as it is to become in its spiritual sense at the end of evolution. The concept of this has many symbolic descriptions, such as the kingdom, the New Jerusalem, etc. The planetary intelligence or the archangelic intelligence is the archangel appointed to guide the planet during its evolution. That archangel is one of the first swarm that assigned to Earth is known in the West as Sandalphon. He is said to have first come into close control of Earth during the Lemurian period, when fire was in a particular manner being introduced into Earth. This archangel, great as he is said to be not quite of the stature of the planetary intelligence of Venus or Mercury, from our present viewpoint. However, his greatness is such that the distinction to us is largely academic. He, too, is developing and reaching out, so to speak, towards another great force, and this concept is indicated in certain esoteric allegories dealing with the symbolism of marriages. From time to time, great entities from other and more developed planets have been in touch with Sandalphon's planetary work, especially from the planet Venus. The planetary being is, as it were, a vast elemental composed of the consciousness, using the word in a wide sense, of each one of its children, the children being all the lives upon the earth. Humans, beasts, birds, reptiles, fish, insects, etc. In the great elemental, the planetary being, all these are, or should be, one, and so they are, or should be, one in their relationship to each other. It is because that relationship has been shaken, broken and betrayed that so many ills have come to pass. It can be assumed that when the kingdom comes, when the logoidal idea of this planet is truly manifested, then indeed all Earth creatures will be one on a certain level. All should remember that as developed and developing human beings, they have a great debt to the earth, who is in very truth their mother, their parent. They are made of her substance and live upon her substance, and all that they do here on earth, all that they discover in science, all that they make in art or industry are also parts of her. But she develops less quickly than her children, and it is the duty of the children by their development to aid hers. Therefore, whatsoever you do, let it be not only for your own gain or interest, but also for the gain and keen interest of the planetary being. The more that you do that is consciously shared with this vast elemental parent, the more will those things prosper not only in her but in you. There is no thing on earth, no thought brought through to earth, which does not concern the planetary being, however great or lofty, however, unfortunately, mean or base. You have a very great responsibility not only to yourselves and to each others, but also to the great group soul of the earth, the great mass mother of you all. The more you are in touch with her, the more will you earn the privilege of the contact with her guiding intelligence, and that intelligence will guide you not only in matters immediately concerning the earth life, but in using such things to pave the way for the future towards the time when the planetary being will become one with the planetary entity. Therefore, help to join these two together, the locoidal concept of the earth, which even if you cannot clearly envisage it, you can to some extent imagine, and the planetary being, and let that purpose unite with your wish to forward evolution and your effort to pass on all that you can of help to the Earth Mother. As all of you develop through the ages, so do you carry this vast parent and her development along with you. When you stray from the right path, so do you lead her astray, and this is a grievous wrong, for it holds the degradation of the planetary being. Be mindful, too, in thinking of the planetary being, to think also of all other stages of life upon her: birds, beasts, insects, elementals, and all forms of life, for to these do you bear relationship. There has been much superstition and sentimentality connected with this divine law of unity, but keep well in mind the great truth of the interrelationship of all when you shed the superstition. Be aware of the planetary being as a being of immense age, in which each one of you is as it were embedded, and through which you draw your earth life. It could be compared to an enormous beehive with millions of sections, each of which holds a snafu bee malting honey. Be aware, too, of the archangelic intelligence as having tremendous protection, love and devotion for each and every creature on the earth, because each creature is part of earth, and as being able to guide each one of you either indirectly through the planetary being or directly if you have the right approach to him and have earned and maintained the right of direct contact with him. What is said here, however fanciful the expression may appear, is deeply real and worth the intensest consideration. End.